Let me introduce our today's speaker. It is Pierre Dillenburg from EPFL, from the École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne, university in Switzerland. So he was an elementary school teacher and graduated from educational science at a Belgian university, the University of Mons. He started his research on learning technologies in as early as 1984, which is now about 30 years ago. He obtained a PhD in computer science, then later on from the University of Lancaster in the UK. There he worked in the domain of artificial intelligence and its applications for educational software. He has been professor assistant, or is that the same as assistant professor? I don't know, at TECFA at the University of Geneva. Then later he joined EPFL in November 2002. He has been the director of CRAFT. Many of you know that lab, also an acronym, but now after 10 years he moved that the thing and had at least an additional lab. It's called the Chili Lab, and it's also, I think, a slight move in his research focus on computer-human interaction for learning and instruction. So it's CHI research, computer-human interaction research on learning and instruction. Pierre, you advanced very much the topic of orchestration, the discussion around that, and we are very much looking forward to your presentation and discussion. Are you still with us? Yes, good.
Okay, Frank, how do you want us to proceed now?
Well, the idea would be that as we discussed a little bit before, maybe you can just introduce the topic. I think most of the participants have watched the video. At least I saw the number of accesses at the YouTube video rising very, very quickly from, well, I think it increased over 400 in the last couple of days. So we had a lot of people watching this video. Well, if you focus on some of the ideas and then give people the chance to also discuss about the core ideas of it.
Okay, so this idea comes from the evolution, I would say, of collaborative learning. So at the beginning of research on collaborative learning, tell me if you can not hear me, put a message in the chat. At the beginning of research on computer-supported collaborative learning, the idea would be just put people together and they will learn by doing a team. And then progressively we realized that if we want, some teams spontaneously work well together, but some don't, and you have to organize collaboration. You have to structure it, and progressively emerge a notion of script, which is, let's say, sequence of activities, roles, instruction to organize collaborative learning. And this script became richer and richer. So in all cases, we have script that includes collaborative learning activities, things like jigsaw methods with roles, with conflict and so on, but also individual activities and classroom activities like lectures or debriefings. So the pedagogy of using computers for collaborative learning in the classroom became quite complex. You know, as a teacher, you have to manage team activities and then individual activities, class activities. And progressively, we realized that the management of these collaborative learning activities in the classroom was getting complex. And as we were working with teachers, we improve our technologies to make sure they can use them. We change, we add some features, and at some point we realized that some of the technologies we invented were not for exactly learning activities. They were not exactly technologies for learning. They were not aimed at the individual learner or at the team. They were more aimed at the classroom management, at the orchestration of the activities in the classroom. So the word orchestration apparently was not well selected. So what we mean by orchestration is the real-time management of rich learning activities. And so we had in mind the idea of the conductor of an orchestra, and everybody has to play and he has to manage all this complexity. And actually, this is not called orchestration. In music, orchestration is before the play. It's writing a partition with different voices. So we use the metaphor orchestration. I think Frank and I, we were drunk some night when we started to use this word. And but it's not the perfect word. But no, it's too late. Like, it's not exactly. So orchestration is not playing the orchestra, is preparing the score, the musical score for the orchestra. In our case, when you talk about classroom orchestration, it's about how do you consider the real-time management of classroom activities. And so what I show in the video is some example, like this paper card and so on, that have this role of helping the role of the teacher in managing the classroom. That's one point. And the second point as an introduction is that because of that, we started to consider very practical aspects of daily life of the teacher. One of my favorite examples is the login, you know. Why do we students have to log in? It's taken for granted that when you use a system, you have to log in. But if you are a teacher, if they waste 5 minutes for the login, this is 10% of the lesson time, you get 10% increased learning outcomes because of the functionalities given to you by the login. Another example, if you talk about multi-touch table, many people use this multi-touch table. Some of them require a darkness. They don't work in daylight. If you are a teacher and you have to make the classroom dark, and if some of you have been teachers, you know that's the end. You know, the kids have too much fun in the dark and so on. So the kind of side effect of orchestration is there some very practical aspect of classroom management. Miguel Nussbaum called them the logistics of classroom management, like. You know, how do you distribute, how do you collect? Often do students have to sit differently? All the constraints that a teacher has in his daily class. For instance, one stupid one, but not stupid. One big one is discipline, okay. We don't want kids to be quiet in class, we want them to be engaged. But don't want them to fight. Otherwise, you have problems as a teacher. You have problem with both the director and the parents within a few minutes. So, add the technology that we have. Do they really help the teacher to manage all these logistics, these constraints? Like you give an iPad to all the kids. Cool. All the kids receive an iPad. You spoil the life of the teacher. You know, the teacher is there, all the kids have an iPad, they are excited, and you try to say, hey guys, can I get your attention 2 seconds? And it will take you 5 minutes to get it. So can we combine an iPad with something else that will help the teacher to manage the classroom? That's the kind of flavor of orchestration. The idea is to make great pedagogical activities, but these great activities may completely fail if we don't consider at all the organizational linguistics of the organizational aspect, the logistics of the classroom. And this is not something that we can write about in learning science. But down the road, if we have successful learning activities in an experiment and we want to scale them up, so to apply it in many schools, if we don't consider this very practical aspect, we will always fail. And you know, our field has more or less failed to have a major impact so far on education. So if we want to have more impact, we should consider this logistics aspect. Maybe a last comment is that, of course, this is a bit teacher-centric, and because we have to consider the role of the teacher. These technologies especially pay attention of the role of the teacher in a classroom. So some people get very annoyed by that. They say, well, Pierre, we have to be learner-centric. And I would argue that, of course, the only goal is that the learner learn. But nonetheless, the guy who is the boss in the classroom, who is organizing, orchestrating this activity, is a teacher, is responsible. He's responsible for the learning of the kids. So we have to help him to make his job. If we make technology that makes his job more difficult, then no surprise that he does not like these technologies. So that was a kind of my summary of this story.
Okay, would that mean that we you invite the audience to ask questions? Or, I mean, I know you have prepared some questions. Would that be the right time for introducing some of these questions, Pierre?
Let me first check with the audience if some people have questions, comments, and if not, we will proceed. But let's see from the audience. Okay, apparently not. So let me find one question that corresponds to something I hear quite often. Here it is. Are the teachers insufficiently trained for the use of technology in the classroom? And I heard very often that the problem of under-exploitation of learning technologies is that teachers are against or reluctant to change or badly trained? Or is it a problem that all technologies are not good? Then I don't know if people, when Brian, Daniel, Kim, Suzanne, if you have some opinions about that.
I would suggest because we also have some groups sitting there, at least that worked quite well to start the discussion, if we give a couple of minutes for everyone to think about that, to reflect on that, or to discuss that in the local groups. So my suggestion would be 4 or 5 minutes, and then we could work on this, right, Pierre?
Okay, 4 or 5 minutes. Frank, we write a paper during that time, and then we come back.
You are the one writing papers in that amount of time.
But there are some people are alone in front of the camera. What is the suggestion?
I think the suggestion would be they should do the internalized discussion, which is called reflection, and then let us know what the outcomes of their reflection is. So answer the question, basically.
You are the son of Vygotsky.
Hi, I'm wondering what is really new about the fact of having technology to orchestrate, because maybe that's something the teachers have been doing for a long time, and if maybe the side effects that you talked about could be avoided by having two people in the classroom, like the teacher and someone else, more dedicated to technological management of the technological tools or something like that.
Thank you. There is nothing new in the orchestration activity per se. Teachers have to orchestrate these classes since there are teachers in classes. So teachers who use classroom without any technology for all the time are to orchestrate. I especially think about teachers in old schools, like in Europe. In the old schools, you had in the same class students from first year, second year, third year, fourth year, fifth grade, sixth grade, and so on. And that was a pretty complex orchestration. Now, and actually some people used the word orchestration in like 20 years ago without any reference to technology. I think my point is that this activity should be integrated in the thinking that we do when we design learning technology. We should not only think about the learning activity for the kids, but also about the orchestration activity by the teacher, which does not necessarily mean that we need a complex cockpit or dashboard for the teachers. My favorite example of orchestration stuff is these simple paper cards that I explained in the video. But so it means that when we design technologies, we don't only consider the learning activity per se, which of course remains the most important thing, but we also take into account how the teacher will manage a classroom. No. So it's not only all the teacher will manage a technology, but all the teacher will manage the entire pedagogical scenario that includes technology and non-technology aspects. Now, adding a second teacher per class, you know, that's just impossible in terms of financial terms. So that's a nice, actually, even if there was money, it's not easy to teach with somebody else. But that will be probably an added value. In some schools, they have two teachers, and that would be very interesting to do, not for necessarily for offloading teachers from the technology, but for other pedagogical reasons, it would be interesting. But financially, it's just impossible.
Okay, could we hear some of the interim results of the other groups, LMU, Encore Lab, Toronto, and so on, LSRI? So what is the status of your discussion?
Can you guys hear us? Is step one? Yeah? Okay, I'm going to talk as if you guys can hear us. Okay, I see happy faces. All right, sweet. We're on to our second computer. So for us, I guess there were a couple things that came out of this. The first thing is sort of coming with what Pierre's question was, is I think in terms of orchestration as a whole, and you know, especially when we think of the term like orchestration or orchestrable technologies, a lot of these things are really new. And so we're not necessarily as concerned with how do we get these technologies out, or these, you know, these aspects of orchestration into a larger spectrum of teachers, like a whole school board yet. We're still trying to understand how individual elements can help or support orchestration. Just like Pierre had his cards, you know, we don't necessarily know if that's something that is a useful tool for orchestration until we do it. And then we learn from it and we iterate. And so for us, you know, we have some early findings. You know, a lot of our stuff is design-based research where we try things out and some pieces work and others don't. A great example for us was originally we had a tablet that in real time showed the teacher how kids were doing in individual tasks and when they completed them. And what we found was, this was actually based on some early work by Miguel Nussbaum, but what we found was the teacher very quickly put the tablet down on the table and he stopped using it, and we wanted to know why. And he's like, because he spent all his time with his head down into the tablet, and his head wasn't up actually seeing what kids were doing. So these are the kind of things that, you know, so we had to adapt our tools to actually help the teacher given, yeah, sure. Well, they're not for super Olympic teachers. They are very complex, but that actually, Pierre, touches on another thing. Part of this came out of the fact that, you know, if you look at a lot of inquiry or knowledge communities, for the most part, they don't work, or at the very least, they don't get large uptake. You know, a lot of the challenges are teachers start to enact a complex knowledge community classroom, and there's too much going on. There's too many resources they have to deal with, too many kids, too many things. Like trying to do FCL, or let's talk about jigsaws in a large class in real time. What happens is a lot of the literature always says they fall back to saying we're doing a knowledge community approach, but they're just playing the roles of certain pieces. They're not actually engaging in the kinds of rich pedagogical practices that are at the core of all of these learning theories. So a lot of our technologies are like, how do we offload, or how do we reduce, or if not reduce, help manage that orchestrational load? Is everything we do every time perfect? No, you know, I agree with the minimalism idea, but, you know, I would even go back to something that in that book chapter that you guys had was, I think it was Jeremy Rochelle and Lurich who talked about it, that, yes, modest computation is excellent, and I think it's really valuable, and I'll stop after this because there's a cue. But there's something that I think is missed with the minimalism in some cases about being able to do some rich traces and understandings of the learning pathways of students. The things that are really exciting to me about your work with the cards is how simple and easy it is to do these things, but over longer periods of time, multiple classrooms or lots of kids doing things at once, paper cards don't do a good job of tracking or being able to act on all of the things that are happening within a community, all the rich and complex things that are, you know, happen over these periods of time. I'll get back. I want other people to talk, but I'm happy to answer that question. And I think that systems, if you design good data mining, good sort of report systems, or even agents that act upon some of those things automatically, the teacher doesn't have to do those things. In my own work, a lot of those things were handled by the system, and when the thing that the teacher said is he got to spend his time teaching and working with the students and not worrying about a lot of that overhead. Yeah, I think the teacher should ski on Sunday too. Absolutely, I'm all about skiing, although we're in Toronto, so it's not so good. But let me go on. I'd love to talk with this.
Well, we are in the UK right now, but we are originally from Turkey. And now current government in Turkey initiated a project aims distributing 15 million tablets to students and teachers. It's 15 million, it's a really big number. And I have been talking with teachers who use tablet PCs right now, and most of them are complaining, complaining about training sessions, because they say that they people in the training session say that tablets will increase collaboration, interaction, or engagement, but they don't give specific activities. They don't, pedagogies about how to manage this, how to achieve the collaboration or interaction or engagement with tablets. But we discussed that there is a kind of limitation. How far can you train a teacher? Because maybe 10 years later we will be talking about the impact of 3D printers, you know, in education, on learning and on learning and teaching, you know. Then it's not possible to train all the teachers for 3D printers. So there should be kind of balance. We should kind of give basic trainings for technology, but it's finally up to teachers. It depends on the teacher's creativity, how to use these technologies, whether it is a mobile phone or tablet or 3D printer. It doesn't matter. I don't know if you...
Well, for technology in classroom, I think it's more up to teacher. It's not only training about the technology, but also classroom management. And if teacher has these skills, they can also develop their skills about new technologies, and in implementing any new technology, they can survive and they can have more success.
I think 3D printers is not in 10 or 15 years. I just ordered one yesterday for my kit because they're getting cheap. But you know, usually my point is that usually computer scientists in this field, they say, you know, I've developed this great system and the teachers cannot use it. What does that mean? I don't know in Turkey, but in Switzerland, all teachers use the web. You know, you cannot buy a train ticket or a concert ticket or a flight ticket if you are not going online. All teachers save their holidays pictures on the web. All teachers use SMS all the time. So these teachers use technology most of the time. The point is we don't have to train them to use a tablet. I don't think so. The point is more first with to train them in which kind of pedagogical scenario they can use tablets. So that's the first thing for this 150,000 iPad that will be distributed to Turkish school. I hope that they come with some kind of pedagogical scenario that teachers can use in the classroom. Otherwise, they will not be used, basically. That's the experience in other countries. And the second thing is that when you use a tablet at home, to search for information, you are basically a tablet is a device designed to be used in your bed. Huh? So you are there in your bed and you scroll, you search information on someone, you have time. When you are in front of 30 kids, you have to manage the beast, okay? This class of 30 teenagers is really a sport to manage a class of 30 teenagers. And there, you cannot search on your iPad. You cannot start scrolling and so on. The application has to be designed in such a way that, you know, it takes half a second for a teacher to do something. So to have a success with the 15,000 iPad in the schools, we need maybe some teacher training more for the pedagogical aspect than for the technical aspect. And then also we have to design, again, that's my point, application that take into account that when you are in front of 30 kids who think about, you know, chatting, smoking, fighting, whatever, you should not start scrolling or typing control tab escape F5. You should be, you know, everything should be kind of immediate for the teacher. So it's really the usability of 15 million. It's really the usability from the teacher point of view where, it has to be was said in Toronto, a minimal load for the teachers. Otherwise, it's impossible.
I'm also involved in a one device per child project actually in the Middle East, and one of the targets we've been set is to try and include children with a disability or some either pedagogy or a set of recommendations that will allow for inclusion within the education that's delivered. So we've been running focus groups. And one of the issues that's coming up is that, yes, a lot of teachers are saying that they need training, and they're focusing their attention on the need for training in the technology, but they're not focusing really on requiring training in terms of the pedagogy that they need to apply to either foster collaboration or to look at including a child who learns differently within their classroom situation. And to some extent, there's no imperative there for them to look for that extra training or that extra framework for their own education, because the curriculum and then the assessment methodologies are not reflecting the need to have collaborative learning skills or skills to work with other children in a positive or a constructive manner.
So, Ryan, I agree with you and the people from Toronto as well. I think one of the things that we keep finding is that many teachers don't have a practice of taking a meta perspective on their pedagogy. As such, when it's time to integrate technology, especially a technology that supports collaboration in the classroom, their pedagogy around how to orchestrate does not fit, because they don't have a kind of meta perspective. They don't have a way of planning that fits the technology into the ongoing instruction. We find again and again teachers who say, well, I'm used to being able to kind of come in and sort of wing it. That is, you know, it's a United States American idiom, you know, just sort of fitting things as they go along, and so they don't do a lot of planning ahead of time around how the pedagogy matches with the technology and what might happen if the students don't learn in a particular way on that day. They don't have a plan for that. Therefore, the technology is just another impediment for them in trying to orchestrate that classroom. So the technology can't be about training for the technology per se. It has to be about how does the technology in some ways help to change the ways that teachers have just engaged in a kind of winged activity, where they're really a winged pedagogy, where they're really not taking a meta perspective on the technology itself, on the orchestration, and what might happen if things don't go as they had planned.
Two points, answering to Brian and Kim. First of all, of course, teachers will never say that they need a pedagogy class, okay, or more pedagogical training. First of all, everybody hates pedagogues in general. So teachers, more than everybody else, hate pedagogues who will tell them how to teach, first thing. Second thing, if you tell we need more pedagogical training, it would mean that they acknowledge the fact that they need this kind of training, which is, you know, kind of self, big self-critique. So, at the same time, they will accept to have some technical training, but which kind of technical training would you give for using an iPad? Basically, you know, there is not much to teach. So what I would recommend is say, yeah, this is a technical training, because for that you will get funding. For pedagogical training, you will not get no funding and no interest. So if you say I organize a class on pedagogy, you will have no teacher, no money. If you say I have to integrate a class on using iPad in school, you will have money and technology. But still, 90% of the contents of it's about, as Kim mentioned, it's about what to do with this iPad. What can I concretely organize when I come in the morning, and I will not come 30 minutes before my lesson? You know, I have no time. I have also kids. I have also a lot of things in my life. So I will come, as always, 5 minutes before my lesson, and I have no, and there I have to run something, and he had to run efficiently. And one example for that is this, I don't know if you've seen in the logistics simulation, the teachers have a binder, and they open the binder, they take a sheet, they put the sheet on the table, and that's the activity. No login, no HTTP /something/something. So kind of develop with them things that work, you know, as when you say, please open your book, okay, some of the kids have forgotten the books, some of the kids. So it still takes a bit of time, but you shouldn't be, when you say take your iPad and launch this activity, it should take no more than that. Now, the second thing is that asking teachers what they want is useless, okay? Because what they will more or less say is they want a blackboard or they want a book. They will kind of reproduce the activities that they know. So, you know, it's in general, if I would have asked you 20 years ago, would you like to have a technology where you send message by typing three times on a letter of your phone, you would say never, and still there are billions of email every day, of SMS every day. So asking people what they want is not the best thing. The way we achieve highly usable technology, I think, is because we design with them. It's not that we ask them, what do you want? They don't exactly know, and we don't exactly know. We are not guru. So by co-design with them, we brought some concrete objects, and then they get some ideas, and we go back to the lab, we change the project, we come back with something else. And this ping-pong between the teachers of us led us to things which were pedagogically useful and also usable. And so it's not that they know exactly, it's not that we know exactly. It's like a ping-pong between the technology developers and the people we are in the real class and who have all this constraint to manage. That was, for me, that's better than to ask which kind of training do you need. They actually usually don't know exactly what they need because they've never done it before.
Yes, I think the teachers need to be engaged also in communities of learners. They, if they're treated as learners, and are part of the conversation, then they're much more likely to be able to say what they need. They need also to experience the power of any of these technologies through collaboration with other teachers, because both of those things may be new for them, and this firsthand experience is what allows them in the moment-to-moment of classrooms to make changes in their teaching. I was involved in a project for 10 years where we were having teachers learn how to make movies using iMovie as part of the curriculum, as commentary and reinterpretation of the curriculum. And it worked very well. We did professional development for hundreds of teachers. However, these contexts in schools also are so punitive for teachers, at least in the U.S. context. There's an extreme context of testing. We have now new core curriculum standards, and this works against anything that could take any more time at the level of the administration, at the level of the school district, at the level of the state, pushing for test preparation that does not include technology. So I'm just, I guess the bottom line for me is treating teachers as professionals who need to learn in communities also, and not treating them as just the single impediment to integrating technologies in classrooms.
Hello. I don't know if it's okay. Okay. I wanted to emphasize like two of the things you have said. Like first, that you prefer the teacher-centric approach. I'm really totally up for that, and I really like your idea. And my question, and you also state that teachers are they teach on routines, and my question is how to engage the teachers in a new learning process, because first they are changing position of being teachers to being students again when you try to implement something new. And for instance, I work in a project for 1 year, and the problem was that we were trying to implement like a series of games in the classroom. They weren't even video games, they were normal games. We trained the professors, we made a whole set of tasks, scaffolding, as you will call, to the professors. And when we went to the follow-ups, the professor was saying, like, why should I do that? Like, they really haven't done it, or they just put the toys there and the children just do whatever they wanted with them. And when we asked, like, why? Well, we train you, you already know how to use the tool. And they say, why would we do that? We already have our way of teaching. And well, I really don't want to implement it. And I for me, it's a nonsense, because I already have my things and they work. So I really don't want your new toys. So how can you really engage the professors? And I don't know, it's not even about technology like computers or iPads. It's even like putting something new in the classroom can be a big challenge.
Hi. I wanted to ask a question about orchestration and also about this teacher-centered approach. My question is, could it be useful to work also and co-design with students? And do the students have a role or play a role in orchestrating the classroom too, specifically when they're working in teams, in small groups? Very often, this kind of collaboration is based on some kind of leadership, quite informal leadership. And could we give tools to the students also to be orchestrating this type of activities?
It's a bit difficult to orchestrate because my working memory cannot memorize multiple consecutive questions. So I wanted first to answer to who was it? Let me find the names. To Carlos from LMU. Yeah, you are right. It's difficult. It is difficult to engage teachers. We had the case that we tried to follow very much what the teacher wanted. And at the end, we made an activity which was very boring. And basically, our rich augmented reality tool became a book, a booklet or something like that. So it's a kind of very narrow line where we try to push them a little bit and we listen to them, but we don't do exactly what they ask us. And the kind of, there is a thin line there where we have to find equilibrium between trying to innovate and listening to what the teachers need. And so the key point for me is, where do we start from? What I like to do in my project is to start from a problem. Is there a problem? And, you know, like the logistics example, this logistics simulation, it was very difficult for teachers to explain logistics to these big guys who move boxes and hate mathematics. So that was, you know, that was a solution for them. So for this little extra effort that they have to do was justified by the fact that it's a problem for them. So if we come and you say we have a solution and they don't have a problem, then, of course, it's more difficult. Now, honestly, it takes six months to find a nice problem. Because, of course, in our case, my students do a PhD in computer science at the end, so we still need a problem for which a solution is a software or hardware. Okay, sometimes the solution is increase the salary of the teacher or reduce the size of the class. Or sometimes the solution of the problem is not technology. So we need some time to discuss with teachers, to discuss with parents, or in our case, teacher, to discuss with the companies and with the apprentice work to find out what is. Is there a problem that we can address, and then the gate of the school is easier to open? That's one thing. The second thing is that, you know, you've seen in our technology with a lot of concrete objects and a lot of paper. And paper is quite good to build a dialogue with teachers, because, and also plastic shelves. You know, we had nice teachers, but the first day we brought plastic shelves to the classroom, the discussion became more concrete. So the second point is to have objects. Like, paper is cool because you can go to the cafeteria at the school and sketch on paper directly what they will use. So that's also another trick to be able to engage discussion with teachers. But honestly, this is not easy. This is, you know, it's trust building. You know, we also, you know, pay them some wine, bring them to the restaurant, learn what they do. Like, the teachers love, if, you know, we work with carpenters, they love the fact that we learn about carpentry. That's for the Munich question. Now, for the Lyon question, of course, students can orchestrate themselves. And it's even the goal of school that students become more autonomous and depend less and less from teacher orchestration. So I would say it depends which kind of learning activities you do. If you do some kind of project-based education, then of course you want usually the teacher to fade out as much as possible and let the students manage the project, because that's one of the things they have to learn, is to manage a project. If you do a guided discovery learning activity, physics first year, even if they are 20 years old, basically you don't want them to learn project management then. There you want them to learn physics, because there is a test of physics next week. And so there you would expect the teacher to really optimize the time of the learner. And because, you know, if they have to learn self-orchestration, will they take time? So if this is not a goal of your class, if your goal of your class is physics concept first year, then you might give more self-orchestration to the teacher.
I think there's a big point. It's sort of building on what Pierre said, that we take co-design very seriously in our work, because, you know, we are learning scientists and on a fairly significant level technologists as well. But we spend our time in those spaces, and the teachers spend 40 hours a week in a classroom, and they know the realities of the classroom, and they understand what, you know, on their level, kind of what works and what doesn't. So, you know, a lot of the times we, you know, it's a problem where we come in, we're like, we have a really good idea about how learning should happen or learning works. So here, just use our thing and we'll study it. And it's a challenge that the teacher feels like they're just using a tool and they don't have the buy-in. So like Pierre said, you know, take 6 months to find a problem. You know, anything that we do takes 6 months of planning, working with the teacher, and that, you know, they have really good insights into the realities of a classroom and classroom management. And we have some good notions built on many years and many iterations of developing technology. So part of it is this discussion of how we get to what our notions of innovation around orchestration and scripting and how we implement those in a classroom, but working with a teacher about what they know really works in the classroom. And over time, we're building things that support them in their real sort of authentic spaces. This kind of produces a bit of a problem, admittedly, with these ideas of scalability. Like, you know, are we going to run some of the stuff we do in 100 classrooms? No, not right now, because I think we're still very new in a lot of these ideas of orchestration and scripting, and especially in technology-rich learning environments, that we want to build the theories around these things and how they work. So we really work with the teacher closely, and then they get buy-in and they actually implement it. If you don't get buy-in, the teacher's going to do exactly, you know, your concerns, that they're going to be like, why should I use this? It's not part of my curriculum. But when they feel like it's a tool that they've helped develop, they uptake in it and they really use it. And, you know, even if there's some glitches along the way, we find that they're more accepting because they have a stake in the actual development and, you know, of it working. So I think that's basically the key there.
Answers to Mike and then to Claire. Mike, are you Dr. Thyssenbaum? No. This co-design with teachers is easy to say, it's difficult, okay? Teachers, some teachers are creative, some teachers are innovative. It's not the main features of teachers. If you choose to become teacher in your life and you know that you will repeat the same course for many, many years in your life, the routine will be a key part of your life. So even if you become teachers because you want to change the world and improve the society, still I would say that most teachers, except a few of them which are fantastic, but the majority are not massively innovative. They don't want to take risk, okay? They don't want to have problems. They don't want to take risks. But if at some point in the discussion there is this little, you know, this little something where suddenly say, oh, yeah, that's what we have to look for. You know, we kind of don't push too much. We try to, as Mike said, know all the problems of the classroom, all the constraints, so we have to listen to that. And from time to time, find this little spot where they will introduce a bit of a new idea, and then they might follow us. So that's the kind of subtlety of the teacher co-design. It's, as Mike said, there is a trust building process there. And to be honest, sometimes if you are successful with one teacher, it's still not so easy to scale up and to convince other teachers. Because the one who are convinced, they've co-designed with you, so they see the technology as their, also their partial contribution. While the new one, which might use the technology in the classroom, this technology might still be relevant because they have some constraint, but it's not their baby. So it's this co-design is not easy to generalize. And when you say that to people in design-based research, that the results of design-based research are difficult to generalize, they get mad, they will kill you. But that's my experience, is that, it's not because you have been successful with one classroom that it will be generalizable. Now, answering to Claire, actually Pierre Tchounikin in Grenoble had developed tools for the self-orchestration of the learner. So that's one thing, like basically they plan their work, they decide which tool they use and so on. That's one answer. The other answer is that there was a very nice paper by, I think it was Sarah Douglas, about the mutual understanding between a teacher and a learner. And she shows how much the role of the learner is important to help the teacher, for instance, to detect the learner misunderstanding. So that diagnosis, cognitive diagnosis, the fact that the teacher understands the mistakes of the learner is actually a collaborative process where the learner needs also to help to behave in such a way that will be easier for the teacher to misunderstand him. So this collaborative view of teaching is very interesting. That was, I don't know, Claire, if this replied to your question. But I think that when...
Well, maybe that's also a point where I could quickly jump to the meta level of that webinar. I think it's a very important question, who is the researcher, by Kim now. But Pierre, you this was one important question that you brought. You have some more questions that we more or less touched in part. But you would you like to go a little bit further in your kind of input that you give, or you think it's a good idea to continue on that discussion? I think one question now touched on by Kim with who is the researcher, also the question, is that really a research issue, of course, but you have also some questions with respect to cognitive load of the teacher in the classroom that might be worthwhile to be discussed while we have more or less 25 minutes left in this webinar.
Okay. Here was a question about the cognitive load of the teacher, and it's very much related to the first question. So, but maybe I'll let you think again for a few minutes about this question before to continue the seminar. So I give you 3 minutes. Okay, so, in education, the cognitive load theory has been very much used to describe the, some of the difficulties in, let's say, in active pedagogy. You know, the main discourse of people in cognitive load is that we should minimize the cognitive load by basically making lectures so that otherwise students will have cognitive overload and fail and so on. I've always been fighting against this theory, but I'm more sympathetic to this theory if we consider the job of the teacher and how we use, how technologies increase or decrease the cognitive load. So I would be, it would be nice to hear what you think about it.
Yeah, I guess, you know, within a discovery learning activity, this goes back to some of the stuff we kind of, you know, discussed earlier that, you know, I would say that Kirshner and O'Donnell and Dasarow and people said this, like, when kids are kind of left to their own devices, they're really not good at picking the right strategies or knowing which direction they're going. And in an open discovery style learning, there's a lot on the teacher, especially if you think like a class of 30 kids. You know, if they're in groups of four or five, you've got anywhere from like 6 to 8 groups of kids all doing things at once, especially if they're on technology, going on the web and all this. The teacher has to be able to know or have a sense of what all the groups are doing, what directions they're going in. Or at the end of an hour, you've got some kids who went down the wrong rabbit hole and didn't do any productive learning. So the orchestrational load for the teacher is how do we support them in having a sense, almost at a glance, of what's going on in the room and where they should be, right? How do you let a teacher, when 7 groups are going on, where's the place they have to be right now to interject and help them make the next step towards productive discovery or productive learning? So it's a duality there. And I think that's a big challenge. And you often see, I think Whitcomb, who was talking about these sort of FCL things, when teachers get overloaded like this, what they tend to do is just retrench, and they just go to simple structures, and they often don't do the kinds of really interesting learning that we, you know, or trying to advance certain theories of learning that we want them to, and it's just, you're just enacting the same old classrooms. So that's sort of the challenge, I think, that we're trying to support, or the kind of orchestrational load we're trying to reduce in the kinds of things that we think about in our research. Over.
Well, you know, I am a PhD student, and next month I am gonna go to Turkey and do my field work, and I will ask teachers to do some activities, some new activities by using tablets and social media in the out of classroom. But as you mentioned, it is when it comes to cognitive load of the teacher, it is very difficult. In our case, for Turkey case, for example, national exams are so crucial, so vital for parents, students, teachers, and governors. So teachers are like in rush to finish the curriculum and finish all the things and teach the text, the test tactics, how to be successful in the exams. So you go with some ideas, and they kind of find themselves in a difficult situation because they are kind of stuck between governors, parents, and you. Governors and parents are expecting them to teach their children to be successful in the exams. But on the other hand, you ask them to do some activities that hopefully will improve or foster students' creativity. So they are kind of on the middle of somewhere, and this kind of, as far as I have experienced, this is a big pressure on them, and this is a big burden on them.
Okay, so 2 answers. First, to Mike in Toronto, I think we have to develop instrument for measuring the cognitive load of teachers. You know, the way in cognitive psychology to measure the cognitive load, the method is to 2 tasks. One task, for instance, you will ask me to do some grammatical exercise, and you give me a second task to say at the same time. So I do the grammatical exercise in German, but at the same time I have to count from 1,000 to 0 by 7, so 1,993, 986, and so on and so on. And this dual task actually is quite close to what a teacher faces. You know, he has to manage time, he has to manage discipline, he has to manage what the hypothesis of the kids doing their learning activities, he has to manage teams, he has to think about the content. And so there is a high cognitive load for teachers, and that's something worth investigating. As Mike mentioned, this idea that a good teacher is kind of getting the situation, you know, he scans the class and he gets the information very quickly. And, you know, we say that even a good teacher has three eyes. He has one eye in the back so that when he's writing on the blackboard, he still view what is going on in the class. That's probably a direction. And in the last weeks, I've been myself teaching with eye trackers. So we have mobile eye trackers, and I'm teaching with his eye tracker, and we at the same time we record the classroom so that we can look. It's a bit intrusive, I must say, but we can analyze how the gaze of the teacher, me here, when we do it with another teacher, is distributed over class, and how do you get a snapshot of what's going on. That's to answer to Mike in Toronto, to answer to the Turkish experience in Nottingham. That's the reality. Schools are driven by tests. And we have two solutions. One is to say we want to change that. And we want to have schools which are driven by more interesting things. So we can either ignore the reality or we can work on changing the test. And for instance, I'm involved in PISA, the international study PISA 2015 for that. That's one attitude. The second attitude is say, well, that's the reality of teachers, okay? Parents want their kids to succeed in their life. And whether you like test or not, the only way to succeed your life and to pass to higher grades is to pass the test. So I think we should be very careful in designing extracurricular activities. I don't know why, in learning technology, we always invent extracurricular activities, like everybody want to teach the global warming effect, okay? But global warming is not the main thing that you are being tested in school. So I think we have to be careful when we do experiment, instead of choosing a cool topic like global warming or anti-racism, or instead of choosing such a, we should make the exercise when we invent a new learning method, maybe to pick up topics that are part of the curriculum so that it's part of what teachers are paid for. If we do extracurriculum, okay, teachers will do it. Some teachers are cool and they will do it. They will do an exception. Especially elementary school teachers have a bit more freedom. They might do an exception for us. But if we want to have an impact on the society, and for you it's not important when you do a PhD, you basically want to do a nice piece of research more than to have an impact on the society. But when you are getting older and you don't care that much about writing, about publishing, whatever, you want to have an impact on society. So if you want to have an impact on the school system, we should take into account that the constraint of teachers is that the kids succeed the test at the end of the year. That's the reality. And if you are not able to make good pedagogy for that, maybe we don't deserve our salaries. Frank, how much time is left? I had the last question if you want to, otherwise up to you.
Well, I think we have 10 minutes left. My suggestion would be to rather wrap the webinar up a little bit, in the sense of maybe having everyone commenting on what he or she takes from this webinar, or what was surprising for them, even after having watched your keynote on video in that webinar. That would be great if we have a quick round where everyone could quickly comment on that. But first, let me ask one question, Pierre. You already mentioned that, well, we have a lot of PhD students here, and also future PhD students, the master students. And I mean, orchestration, some of us a couple of years ago, they said, including myself, well, is orchestration really a research topic? So, because, well, you develop technologies, you also develop some classroom based technologies, let's say, but the orchestration in real time in a real classroom, is that really a research topic? I think 10 years ago, not everyone in this group would have agreed on that this is a research topic. What would be your suggestion for PhD students who would be interested in engaging in research on orchestration processes in the classroom? So what is that a reasonable thing to say, well, now I finish my master's thesis, I will engage in a PhD thesis, and my topic will be orchestration. So is that a reasonable way to go there?
I think so. I would say there are two tracks. If you are a computer science student, or let's say an HCI, human-computer interaction students, one direction for research is to invent this kind of, I agree with Mike, I could call it near minimalism, like very light technology that can be used, you've seen the example of the lantern, this little light, that that can be used as a high usability. In one of the papers, I call it the classroom usability, it's the third circle of usability. So that's certainly one direction is, if you are on the technology side, is to invent these kind of things which are very small, very modest, very minimalist, but still have an impact. That's for now. For the education psychology people, one of the key questions for me, I just mentioned, is the teacher's cognitive load. And we have cool methods for that. We have eye tracking methods. We have electroencephalograms, so we could ask teachers. It's a bit bizarre, but to teach with an EEG, some of them are extremely light stuff, so you need to wear this, a very simple thing. At the same time, you can have video of the classrooms. One of the research track I would suggest is, I call them classroom maps. Like, imagine that you record the gaze of the teacher, and at the end of the week, you can print a heat map of the classroom, which is, you can tell to the teacher, look at these students, this is how much time you spend watching every of the students in your class. We just print the map without any analysis. Just print the map on the Friday afternoon, the teachers go home, and he will just see that he never looked at Suzanne, because probably he believed that Suzanne is not good anyway, and this is dramatic. A teacher is not believing anymore in one student. This is dramatic for these students. The student cannot succeed if the teacher is not expecting. So that would be an attention map. How much did you pay attention to the kids during this week? Another one will be working maps. How much, where did you work in the class this week? You just give him a small technology in his pocket, and at the end, the teacher might see that he has not been working in some part of the classroom. This is very simple technologies, not smart things, just I send back to the teacher something at the end of the week, and he could just reflect on that. And I think it will be modest things that might have an impact. So this measuring cognitive load, producing maps are cool research topics for a PhD in this field.
Okay, thanks. So let's make the quick tour through the sites, and then I would like to thank Pierre after that. So, LSRI, would you like to start, and then LMU, Encore Lab, University of Lyon, Ben Yun?
Well, thank you very much. It was a great experience, and we kind of how I learned how to, we should I should sympathize with teachers, and kind of give attention to their cognitive load. It was a great seminar. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are we?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think that was great. It's really nice to, you know, have a chance to hear sort of, firsthand what everybody is sort of thinking about in this space, because we often, you know, even the years in between are, you know, the publication gap from when, say, the book that Pierre recommended, you know, came out technically last year, but that work is sort of, you know, takes a while to get these things published. So, no, yeah, it's 4 months. It's the final draft is supposed to be in April. So, yeah, it's going. But yeah, thanks so much. I'm working on it. I had to stop to come see this. So, but it was amazing. Thanks guys, for, you know, getting everybody in a room like this. It's too few and far between, especially with such interesting topics that are moving as quickly as these ones are. And, hopefully we'll be able to continue this afterwards. Thanks.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I also really appreciate the opportunity to kind of take a step back. You know, too often we're kind of just too stuck in our own projects, and we're analyzing data and designing and running around. And just being able to sit back a little bit and think about these theories and think about the possibilities was really neat. I'm really interested in this question of, well, when do you take the theories and the technologies that we develop and make them available for use? And, you know, do we do enough of that, or do we do too much of that and we get bogged down in user support and we're unable to progress? I think that's something we should keep thinking about. So thanks a lot for organizing.
Hey, thank you very much for this nice talk and discussion. I think that's very interesting, this idea of orchestration, and also that could be a link to the general rules on a long-term perspective that are applied in a classroom or in a school, and see how a specific orchestration tool can be related to this long-term way to orchestrate interactions at school. Thanks.
Sorry, no sound, LMU, no sound, no video image, no idea why. So maybe you type it, and Ben Yun will make the last step.
Okay, perhaps my connection have some problem, but I just want to say thank you. It's a very interesting topic, and I think in the following year, perhaps I can have a sufficient time and opportunity to further think about this. Thank you.
Okay, thanks everyone. Although we had some technical problems today, thanks a lot, Pierre. That was an inspiring webinar with only two questions and a lot of discussion. I think for me, it's a really new perspective. We discussed that before, but it was clearer today for me that you suggest a teacher-centric design without the teacher needs to be the most innovative and creative part in that process, but with the goal to help the teacher to manage his class in real time as the most important aspect. Okay, thanks Pierre. Would you like to have the final words? Thanks everyone for participating. Bye.
Okay, thank you to you for setting this up, Frank, and bye-bye, everybody. Good night in Singapore, and good day in Toronto. Bye-bye.